Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 22, Text Number 35. Tatrapi moksha evarta.
Tatrapi moksha evarta.
Adyanti kata yeshate.
Adyanti kata yeshate.
Trivargyo rito yato nityam. Ritanta bhaya samyuta. Tatrapi moksha evarta. Adyanti kata yeshate. Trivargyo rito yato nityam. Ritanta bhaya samyuta. Tatrapi moksha evarta. Adyanti kata yeshate. Trivargyo rito yato nityam. Ritanta bhaya samyuta. Tatra. There. Api. Also. Moksha. Liberation. Eva. Certainly. Arte. For the matter of. Adyanti kataya. Most important. Ishate. Taken in that way. Trivargya. The three others. Namely, religion, economic development, and sense gratification. Artha, interest. Yata, where from. Nityam, regularly. Krita, anta, death. Bhaya, fear. Samyutaha, attached. Translation here. Sanat Kumara speaking, replying to the questions of Prithu Maharaj. So, he says, out of the four principles, namely religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation, liberation has to be taken very seriously. The other three are subject to destruction by the stringent law of nature, death. Purport, moksha or liberation has to be taken very seriously, even at the sacrifice of the other three items. As advised by Suddha Goswami in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, religious principles are not based on success in economic development. Because we're very attached to sense gratification, we go to God, to the temple or churches for some economic reasons. Then again, economic development does not mean sense gratification. Everything should be adjusted in such a way that we attain liberation. Therefore, in this verse, liberation, moksha, is stressed. The other three items are material and therefore subject to destruction. Even if somehow we accumulate a great bank balance in this life and possess many material things, everything will be finished with death. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that death is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who ultimately takes away everything acquired by the materialistic person. Foolishly, we do not care for this. Foolishly, we are not afraid of death, nor do we consider that death will take away everything acquired by the process of Dharma, Artha, and Kama. By Dharma or pious activities, we may be elevated to the heavenly planets, but this does not mean freedom from the clutches of birth, death, old age, and disease. The purport is that we can sacrifice our interests in trivargya, religious principles, economic development, and sense gratification, but we cannot sacrifice the cause of liberation. Regarding liberation, it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, verse 9, Chakva deham punar janmanaiti. Who knows the full verse? Speak. Translation, please.
One who understands the transcendental nature of my activities and appearance does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again into this material world, but attains my eternal abode.
Mm. Thank you. Liberation means that after giving up this body, one does not have to accept another material body. To the impersonalist, liberation means merging into the existence of impersonal Brahman. But factually, this is not moksha, because one has to fall down into the material, one has to again fall down into this material world from that impersonal position. One should therefore seek the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engage in his devotional service. That is real liberation. The conclusion is that we should not stress pious activities, economic development, and sense gratification, but should concern ourselves with approaching Lord Vishnu in his spiritual planets, of which the topmost is Goloka Vrindavan, where Lord Krishna lives. Therefore, this Krishna consciousness movement is the greatest gift for persons who are actually desiring liberation. Again, the verse. Tatrapi moksha evarta adyanti katayeshyate trivargyo rito yato nityam kritanta bhaya sangyuta. Out of the four principles, namely religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation, liberation has to be taken very seriously. The other three are subject to destruction by the stringent law of nature, death. So, throughout the Vedic scriptures, especially Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, great stress is placed on the eternal nature of the soul, of developing and maintaining that understanding and applying it in one's life. Materialistic persons strongly identify with this body and often, or even usually, consider that everything is finished at death. Well, not all materialistic persons. There are sinful materialistic persons and pious materialistic persons. So many pious materialistic persons, they do believe in a eternal life, but still they're very focused or more focused on the temporary material life. This verse and purport mentions dharma, artha, kama, moksha, this pious cycle of Vedic life. So as Prabhupada explaining here in the purport, people go to church or temple performing some kinds of religious activities, religious rituals, but with a motive for economic development. Prabhupada mentioned how Christians go and request God, give us this day our daily bread. God, give me this. God, give me that. He also mentioned how communists, they would also wait outside. Has God given you anything in the church? No. Here we are. We'll give you grains, food, distributing. Just be communist. But, of course, many people, by pious religious activities, do get some blessings from God, or maybe rather, or often rather, from demigods that we see, especially in India. People worshipping different demigods for material benefits. Just like in the Govardhan Leela, of course, we're giving it as example of Dharma Artha Karma, but we should preface that by saying this is a special Leela. We shouldn't think that Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men were ordinary, you know, karmis, pious karmis, worshipping Indra, you know, for material benefit. I mean, after all, they're eternal associates of Krishna. But still, they were playing that role, as it were, as if, you know, so that Leela could take place. Ultimately, so that Lord Krishna could display his amazing transcendental powers. So they were preparing all the ingredients for the Indra Yagya, sacrifice for the pleasure of Indra. And child Krishna approached, and in a charming voice, asked his father, "Daddy, what are you all doing here?" "Father, Pitaji, what are you all doing here?" And his father explained that we are a cowherd community and we depend upon the cows for our livelihood. And the cows depend upon grass, lush green grass. Cows have how many stomachs? Huh? Four or two? A number of stomachs. Okay. And they enjoy chewing the cud, as they say in English. They enjoy living in a field with green grass, and they can eat grass, practically speaking, day and night, isn't it? Constantly chewing grass. And then the more green and lush the grass is, the more their become fatty and the more they produce very rich milk. So Nanda Maharaj explained like that we are cows, we depend on the cows. Cows depend on green grass. And to get good green grass, nice rainfall is required. So Indra is the king of heaven, and in particular he controls the rainfall. So let us please Indra by performing this yajna, and he'll supply plentiful rain, and in this way the grass will be long and green, and the cows will enjoy, relish eating lots of green grass. Therefore they'll be fatty and they'll produce abundance of milk, and from that milk we can produce ghee, yogurt, butter, buttermilk, different kinds of sweetmeats, etc. These can be sold or bartered. So that is artha, that is economic development. So the yajna to worship it, that is dharma. It is a motivated kind of worship to get some blessings, to get some benefit from Indra, so that the cows will produce plenty of milk and the community can become wealthy. And being wealthy, they can afford all kinds of comforts of material existence. Nice house, plenty of foodstuffs. So this is dharma, artha, kama. And even the pious karmis, they're mostly focused on that. Moksha, that is something later. Maybe in old age. We can think about that a bit more. Or hope that if we've been pious and respected the demigods and other living entities, then after death, the Supreme Being will be happy with us, or we'll be, pious enough or purified enough by our pious activities to actually merge into Brahman. Many of them think that that is actual liberation. Well, anyway, we'll cease to exist as persons. We give up this body, we'll cease to exist as persons, but we'll merge into Brahman. We won't have to fall into some hellish condition. Although the Vaishnavas say, what do they say? About impersonal liberation.
It's worse than hell.
Yes, something like that. Yes.
The happiness experience there is compared like just a drop.
Sorry?
The happiness experience there is just compared with a drop.
Well, that's also true. But what you said was what I was thinking of. Kaivalya Narakayate. Kaivalya, or liberation into Brahman. Narakayate, it is hell for the Vaishnava, because Vaishnavas are absorbed in bhakti and devotional service to Krishna. And in order to have service and reciprocation, there has to be personalities. The Supreme Being has His personality, form, attributes. And we also have a personality. We are infinitesimal, whereas He's infinite. But reciprocation, that relationship is there. And it's very relishable. Well, devotees are relishing different kinds of tastes, rasas, through the performance of devotional service. So there's so much variety in spiritual life, so much that is relishable and interesting and attractive. And to just, you know, wipe it all out, it's like hellish. Huh? It's boring. You try to merge into Brahman. It's not going to give real satisfaction to the soul. Because a soul is active by nature. And a soul also has desires. You know, there's also spiritual bodies and spiritual mind and spiritual intelligence. So the pure soul, he has desires, but they're spiritual desires to please Krishna, to serve Krishna. All the inhabitants of the spiritual world are, you know, they have desire to serve Krishna in a variety of ways, and Krishna reciprocates with them, and this gives them inspiration, more inspiration to serve even more. And Krishna is relishing. And Krishna is so attracted by the love of Radharani that he took the position of Lord Chaitanya in order to taste the sweetness of Radharani's love. So he's attractive to Krishna, and it's attractive to the devotees as well. So just to stop everything and wipe everything out and just merge into some dormant condition, it's not at all attractive for the devotee. Even it's not that attractive for materialists either, because, you know, they're also, we can say, relishing the varieties of material existence. Their personalities here, they're interacting, they're enjoying relationships with one another. Of course, there are many problems in the material world. It's all temporary. And when someone passes away, there's lamentation. Some famous personality recently, he was asked, what happens after death? And he replied, well, we can be sure that our loved ones will be lamenting and missing us. Well, that is something that happens after death, even in a Vaishnava society. Although the Vaishnavas, they also see it in a very positive way. When the Vaishnava departs, the other Vaishnavas, they feel some separation. So some kind of lamentation is there, we can say. Narottam Das Thakur has written a famous song, Ye Anila Premadana. It's a kind of lamentation for the departed Vaishnavas. But simultaneously there is also joy. That's why on the disappearance days of the Vaishnava Acharyas, we have festivals. It's a celebration of the life of such great Vaishnavas, the teachings of such great Vaishnavas. Opportunity to hear their specific teachings and hear about their specific service and achievements. So it's a simultaneously it's an occasion of some lamentation, but not over lamentation. A flavor of lamentation mixed with joy and an opportunity also to hear their teachings and about their example. So this all mixed together is a very relishable and beneficial for all. So we do it every year, again and again, we'll especially celebrate the disappearance days of great Vaishnavas. Narottam Das Thakur's disappearance day is celebrated Keturigram, which is in Bangladesh. And there's a three-day festival. Millions of people come, millions of people. And ISKCON, of course, big pandal there, and doing nice programs, glorifying Narottam Das Thakur, singing his songs. And there is a big row of ISKCON stalls. Every temple, I think there's something like 40 temples now. Every temple, all the big temples at least, they have their bookstall there with all kinds of devotional paraphernalia. And they all do very well. Although they're all side by side, they all do very well. Because so many millions of people. Recently also, I received information ISKCON has obtained land there at Keturi, and already construction of ashram may be completed already. Ashram at least where devotees can live, holy place. But we see the tradition of honoring the departed Vaishnava, and every year, and relishing his teachings and his example of his life. But materialists, they tend to be in a more morbid mood of lamentation. Actually, when Narottam Das Thakur seemingly departed, His disciples were carrying his body on a stretcher. That's in traditional in India, at least in Bengal. They carry, and everyone's chanting Haribol, Haribol. So some smarter Brahmas were criticizing. He has broken the tradition, himself not a Brahmin, giving initiation, and giving initiation to anybody from any class, Sudra or lower than Sudra. But of course that's the tradition of Lord Chaitanya, Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Lord Chaitanya, of course, he appeared in a Brahmin family, but still he accepted as his followers personalities like Haridas Thakur, who was from Muslim upbringing, or Rup Sanatan, who were Brahmins but who had become ministers in the Muslim government and therefore were considered to be outcasts. They had Muslim names, Dabir Kash, Shakara Malik. But Lord Chaitanya accepted all these personalities and made them his leading followers, acharyas in their own right. So these smartest were criticizing Narottam Das, and his disciples were feeling pressure, and they were lamenting a bit that their Gurudev had departed. And then Narottam Das Thakur sat up, and he began to rebuke these critics and defeat them. Then he lived for some time, and later he instructed his disciples to take him to the bank of the Padma River, which is part of the Ganga. You know, Ganga divides at where is that? Malda, I think, you know, in North Bengal, northerly Bengal. We have the Bhagirath, which is the part that flows past Mayapur. But in a Padma, it goes into East Bengal, it's now Bangladesh, and then it divides further into many, many tributaries, I guess they're called tributaries. I'm not sure the exact geographical term. We get Delta, what they call the Ganges Delta. So, but there are some big branches in Bangladesh. There's Padma. One of them, also called Yamuna, is very large there. Anyhow, he asked his disciple, take him to the bank of the Padma and lower him into the water and bathe him. And as they were bathing him, his body dissolved like milk into the water. So, it's a holy place. It's in Kettery, there are three holy places. Kettery, where he actually appeared, and Premtali, that's on the bank of the Padma, you know, where he departed and attained full prema. But although he already had great prema, Lord Chaitanya, Narottam appeared after Lord Chaitanya, of course. But Lord Chaitanya once went to the bank of the Padma, and he said that he called out, Nara, Nara, and he deposited prema into the Padma for Narottam. So he attained prema by the mercy of the Lord, and also he departed there at that place. And another place is Bhajantali, where he would perform bhajan. They're all nearby one another. Anyhow, this is the mood of the Vaishnavas, that when a Vaishnav departs, it is glorious. He's going back to Godhead. Or if he doesn't go back to Godhead, he'll take birth again as a devotee, and he'll continue to perform devotional service. So there's no real need for lamentation. The soul is eternal. The eternal servant of Krishna. So anyhow, we see from that Govardhan Lila how, you know, Krishna, he responded to the explanation of Nanda Maharaj by saying that actually we don't depend on Indra, we depend on Govardhan. The Govardhan is supplying the long grass. So therefore, we should worship Govardhan. And Govardhan is non-different from Krishna. So he convinced them, they were charmed by his argument. It's a long lila, of course. Krishna gave some detailed argument how the demigods are anyway just dependent on their worshippers, so they can get their share of the yajna, and they have to, you know, give some blessing, some benediction, just what Brahma gave Nrsingadev, Hiranyakashipu, benedictions. And later, Lord rebuked him, don't give out these benedictions so easily. or Lord Shiva, he didn't give the benediction to Vrikasur. Whoever's head he touched would fall off, and Vrikasur tried to touch Lord Shiva's head. And Lord Vishnu had to appear as a small Brahmin boy and charm that demon and tell him Shiva has no potency, his benediction have no effect. Check yourself, touch your own head. And the demon was bewildered by the Lord's illusory potency. Touched his own head, it cracked and fell off. But anyhow, yes, so the demigods, you know, to some extent, they're, to a great extent, obliged to reciprocate with their worshippers and give them blessings. But as the Bhagavad Gita says, that men of small intelligence worship the demigods. The fruits of such worship are limited and temporary. So one may improve his material condition to some extent, but death takes away everything. Even you have very healthy bank balance, you cannot take anything with you. And the Prabhupada sometimes he criticizes the materialists for building so many skyscraper buildings, and they become so attached to their skyscraper building, and later they may have to take birth in that skyscraper building as a rat or an insect like that. He also, in many lectures you hear Prabhupada say, one may rise to a very high position. He may become prime minister and next birth dog. Many places, he said. But actually, one astrologer said that Jawaharlal Nehru, in his next birth, became a dog in Sweden. The Prabhupada actually mentions that, all of that, but in many times he just says, one birth prime minister, next birth dog. So this is the risk. Jawaharlal Nehru was not a devotee. He was born in Allahabad, I believe, and he requested, Prayag that is, requested that at death, please put my ashes into the Triveni Sangam. Then he said, this has no religious significance. Simply, I like the place. He said, that's all. But of course, he could have got maybe some benefit, but Prabhupada does cite the astrologer saying that he became a dog in Sweden. Anyhow, that is a risk. One birth, wealthy businessman with many skyscraper buildings, and next birth, a rat in one of those skyscraper buildings. That is how karma is working. And of course, the pious karmis, they think that we can both enjoy material life very nicely, and after death, we can be freed from the difficulties of material existence and attain some kind of sublime state merged in Brahman. But of course, as Prabhupada is saying here, this is not the real moksha, because one has to fall down again, because a living entity is by nature active and has desires. There's an example, a Prabhupada cites an impersonalist giving example that a living being is like a water pot, a clay water pot. So when the water pot is empty and you hit it with a stick, it makes a lot of noise. And when it's full and you hit it with a stick, then there's no noise. So he said, the impersonalists say that when a person is in this material world active, when he's very active, then he's making a lot of noise. He's talking, he's acting, doing so many things. But when he becomes self-realized, and through meditation emerges in Brahman, then he stops making noise, he stops acting, he stops talking, he stops thinking, etc. He just merges, gives up his individuality, his personality, etc. But Prabhupada said this is not a valid example. A living being is not a static object like a water pot. A living being is energetic and dynamic. So the impersonal sister is trying to suppress that natural energy of a living entity. And therefore you cannot remain permanently in that position of no action. What is that verse in the Bhagavad Gita that a seer, he can see action in inaction and inaction in action, which actually means, I mean, a devotee can see that, that action in inaction, even though impersonalists are trying to stop all action, there's still some kind of activity. They're breathing, you know, killing some germs or whatever. Or they have to eat something, you know, now and again. Although some may be very self-controlled and able to live only on air. But even by breathing, you know, killing some germs. So there's action, there's some karma within their so-called inactivity. But inaction in action, that is devotee, is very active. But because he's doing everything for Krishna, there's inaction, no karma. That is akarma. So that is a special kind of activity. So that is what's being taught in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Srimad Bhagavatam. How to be naturally active, how to be trained up to use every thought, word and deed in the service of Krishna. We see everyone's active. Look here, everyone's doing something. These boys there, very busy in their activities. They're being trained up how to be active in Krishna consciousness. So this is as Prahlad Maharaj recommended, from very childhood one should take to devotional service to Krishna consciousness. Because children have so much energy. They're running here and there, high tempo. And the parents are struggling to somehow or other, you know, train them, look after them, taking all energy of the parents. Even government may have to give some subsidies to help somehow to raise up the next generation. So their energy, it has to be channeled in a way which will be most beneficial for them. And that is devotional service. So they can develop good character and they can understand how to avoid the trap of karma, especially bad karma. But even good karma, from the position of the Vaishnavas, there is also entanglement. It means repeated birth and death. Even you go to the heavenly planets, you cannot stay there permanently. When your good karma runs out, you have to fall down again. You have to come back to the human form of life. May risk going even lower. So, better to focus ultimately on getting out of the cycle of birth and death and going back to Godhead, as Prabhupada is stressing here in the purport. Now, the conclusion, real liberation, the conclusion is that we should not stress pious activities, economic development, and sense gratification, but should concern ourselves with approaching Lord Vishnu in his spiritual planets, of which the topmost is Goloka Vrindavan, where Lord Krishna lives. Therefore, this Krishna consciousness movement is the greatest gift for persons who are actually desiring liberation, real liberation. But it doesn't mean that one neglects his responsibilities in this world. Doesn't mean that one cannot have any enjoyment or sense gratification. Actually, everything is included in Krishna consciousness. Yesterday, such a nice festival, very colorful, very relishable. Devotees worshipping the beautiful deity, so attractive to see, so nice to see. And chanting the holy names with vigor. And afterwards, very nice feast of Krishna Prasadam, Melbourne Temple, famous as having some of the most relishable prasad in the world. Haribol. Every weekend, thousands of people are coming. So, you are fortunate to have such wonderful facility for spiritual practice. So, everything is there. Devotees also working hard in many ways. We heard the results of the book distribution and the prasadam distribution and the Lakshmi collection. So devotees also working hard, bringing Lakshmi, but using it nicely in Krishna's service. So they're working hard, they're getting economic development, they're getting enjoyment, we can say sense gratification, and they're on the path of liberation as well, and the path of real liberation. So very wonderful process, and we feel very fortunate to be able to participate in this Krishna consciousness movement, which has been brought here especially by the grace of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Recently I was in Khabarovsk, Russia, East Russia, Far East Russia, and I always stay there with a devotee, Grihastha devotee. There's a big house, swimming pool, sauna, etc. But he's a very active devotee. He always hosts the visiting speaker, and he has all the different videos, DVDs of Srila Prabhupada. So when I go there, and you know, his wife prepares nice prasadam, and they always put on the videos of Srila Prabhupada. And recently I was in April watching a video of Srila Prabhupada in Melbourne, and was talking to Aniruddha Prabhu last night about that. And he said, yes, he said, there are probably more video or film of Prabhupada in Melbourne than practically any other place in the world. You know? Because there was a very good photographer here, good filmmaker. So I could see the Prabhupada installing the deities of Gaur Nitai, Prabhupada in Rathiatra, the Prabhupada giving initiation here, Prabhupada morning walks, Prabhupada at what do you call it, Franciscan monastery. So, yes?
Student program.
Student program. Yeah, there was also a program at La Trobe, which got a bit unruly. But anyway, you're fortunate. You have so much blessing from Prabhupada and so much opportunity for devotional service. So take the opportunity and relish the opportunity, the association, and in this way attain real liberation. In fact, it said the devotees are already liberated. Those who are fully absorbed in devotion are already liberated, already on the spiritual platform. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Okay, any question or comment?
In this verse, it is stated that the religion will also be destroyed along with other things. So, if liberation is the only thing that is saved, and everything is destroyed by law of nature, how does the information about the Supreme and the ways of obtaining liberation come about again?
Well, it means it's destroyed, you know, for us individually when we leave our body. But all this information is passed down through the cyclic succession. It's passed from one devotee to another. So it remains alive in that way. Of course, ultimately, we can say the material creation is wound up and everything goes back into the body of Lord Vishnu. But Lord Vishnu... As he says in one of the four seed verses that he speaks to Brahma in the second canto, he says, well, before the creation I existed, and during the creation I exist, and after the creation I also exist. So he's eternal. So he'll come in different incarnations, in different manifestations, different... cosmic manifestation. He will come in different incarnations to teach that transcendental knowledge. And he taught it starting with Brahma, the first created being. And Brahma, of course, has his sampradaya. This is a Brahma sampradaya here. Brahma, Gaudiya Vaishnava sampradaya. So, Lord has many means for disseminating this transcendental knowledge. Yes, please.
Prabhupada mentions in the report, then again, economic development does not mean sense gratification. That is contrary to our experience, you see, people enjoy it.
Well, generally, yes, but sometimes it doesn't work out very well. I mean, they may have a lot of money, but they may misuse it, and they may perform a lot of sinful activities and get themselves in a bad condition. Say somebody, he gets a lot of money and maybe he enjoys taking some kind of drug. Say cocaine or something, right? Yeah, and he thinks a very enjoyable experience. And he buys more and more and more and he takes it more and more and more. And then, you know, he becomes crazy or he ruins his health, you know. So it doesn't always work out. And, you know, some people get very wealthy and they invest their money in many businesses and then it doesn't, you know, it collapses and they become bankrupt. So it doesn't always mean... If a person doesn't know how to use money nicely, if he doesn't use it wisely... It can become the cause of his suffering and lamentation. Somebody once I read he won a lot of money in the lottery. You know, he was overjoyed, but then he stopped working and he just, you know, started drinking and wasting all his money, and it ended up he wished he'd never won the lottery.
I
reading Srila Prabhupada's books, we get the impression that the human form of life, or the human birth, is very rare, and the majority of our existence in lower forms of life, as far as I understand, if we, you know, we rise up to the human form of life, and if we don't use that one opportunity, then we may descend. So is it quite rare for a soul to take birth, to take several births in the human form of life in a row? Or?
That's also quite possible. That's also quite possible. Depends on you know, exact nature of his activities. He doesn't necessarily fall down immediately into a very low species. You know, he may have been pious enough that he takes human birth again. Could be several times. And of course he can become a demigod, which is also a kind of human-like form. So, by pious activity, that's a continuation of, he still has opportunity of hearing spiritual knowledge. There are great sages moving around the heavenly planets, like Narada Muni.
Wondering, so what happens to those devotees who went, you know, practiced Krishna consciousness for a while and then completely gave it up and decided, you know, might even chosen to become atheists? I know a few examples of this, so what happens?
Well, again, it depends exactly on the particular mix, what exactly they do. But generally speaking, they'll get human birth again, they get another chance, because they've practiced Krishna consciousness. You're taking prasadam, then Prabhupada said, if you take prasadam, you get human birth. So, but of course, if they've become very offensive to Vaishnavas, they can, you know, generally Prabhupada likes it to a bank account, isn't it? You perform spiritual activity, you accumulate credit in your spiritual bank account, and that's not lost, even if you, you know, fall into materialistic activities. But I think it's in the Nectar of Devotion mentioned that if someone becomes a serious Vaishnava aparadhi, he can lose his spiritual credits. So some cases could fall down lower. But most cases, someone, you know, those who have performed devotional service, that spiritual credit will remain, and next life they'll get human birth, they'll get another chance. Okay, Hare Krishna. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivinoda ki, Nitai Gaur Premanandi.